Welcome to Real Paranormal Activity, the network. Entertainment you'll enjoy.
You are listening to an RPA production, where people gather. LaFoss Corporation, LLC.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the show. Dave Emmons and A Strange Reality. Every week, about twice a week, I have two shows a week, usually. And I'll be networking with other networks, Aaron Hunter's network, and another person's network we're going to network through. And I get on these platforms like YouTube and Rumble and Facebook. And I appreciate the Facebook followings. They're a great group, and you guys have been great for the show, and I appreciate that. Today, my guest today is somebody everybody's going to recognize just by her name alone, and I'm so happy to have her on my show. She's been with me before a couple of years ago, and I know she's had some ups and downs with fighting different things health-wise, COVID and stuff. So like most of us have, and it's kind of a dilemma that everybody's going through something. That 30-day cough, I just had that, and I just got over that. It's 60 days, actually. You want to add that up, it's 60-day cough. But my guest today, Kathleen Martin, she is an author and a camera expert, consultant, international conference presenter, experiencer, advocate, intergenerational experiencer, and hypnosis practitioner. Since 1990, she has researched the perplexing nature of UFOs and the non-human entities associated with highly advanced aerial vehicles via her own groundbreaking research, investigation, and experimentation. She is the 2021 recipient of the International UFO Congress Lifetime Achievement Award, and I saw that. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
For 30 years, she engaged in scientifically focused research on ET experiencers, and I happened to be on her program, I guess, 5 or 6 years ago, and she gave me some great insight. This is a great lady. And her history of government involvement in major UFO studies, we'll talk about that, and the U.S. Government's obfuscation of the facts. During this time, she was closely associated with the Mutual UFO Network as a director and experiencer research team and Edgar Mitchell Foundation for research into extraterrestrial and extraordinary encounters as a research consultant and advisory board member. She has combined to give her depth and of knowledge of that few possess. And I know she's got a sociologist degree. She's a sociologist, so she's gotten into that part of the abduction thing. Her interest in UFOs and contact been in 1961 when her aunt, Betty, of Betty and Barney Hill experience in 1961. She is the niece of Betty, and her encounters and subsequent abduction in New Hampshire's White Mountains. She has wrote a book about that, and she's clarified that, and she's been on TV. I think there's going to be something else on TV. I'll have to ask her about that. That's a sneaky one that's coming up, I heard. I don't know if she wants to talk about it. But it's been an extensive multi-year investigation of their experiences, her several books, and the 60th anniversary edition of Captured, the Betty and Barney Hill UFO Experience, are available for purchase in all formats at online bookstores everywhere. Autographed copies can be purchased in the USA at www.kathleen-martin.com. And her books, Captured, Science Was Wrong, The Alien Abduction Files, Fact, Fiction, and Flying Saucers, Extraterrestrial Contact, Captured. And we're going to be talking, and I know there's a couple of more books we'll have her mention that, but we're going to be talking about this book today. And this is Forbidden Knowledge, A Personal Journey from Alien Abduction to Spiritual Transformation. And that'd be interesting to listen to that. She's got some acknowledgments here. She's worked with some great people, a lot of the biggies that we all know, Linda Moulton Howe, Denise Stoner, Jennifer Stein, filmmaker, Stanton T. Friedman, George Medick, M.D., and Don C. Don Darrell, doctor, retired psychologist, and Dr. Melanie Barton Bragg, and her husband, Charlie. And I know that the wives and husbands have to be very patient. There's the book. Thank you, Kathleen. There it is. Okay. And thank you so much. And her husband, Charlie, and I know that spouses have to put up with a lot of this stuff that goes on because being a ufologist, especially in Kathleen's department with MUFON, she was the director of the abduction phenomena. So with all that said, Kathleen, you have something to add there? And I know I missed a couple of books or whatever. So you want to talk about that? Tell us what's going on.
I think you covered enough. You did a great job of giving an overview of what I have done. And, you know, it's sort of been a lifetime effort because I was only 13 years old when my aunt and uncle had their experience in New Hampshire's White Mountains. And my parents, my brothers and I went to Betty's and Barney's house within a day or two of the time they had their experience. And so I got to see some of the evidence then and heard the story straight from Betty. So it has been a very long journey. It has been fascinating. And I have to tell you that I've looked for the answers. That's been my primary focus, not studying what somebody else has found out or specializing in somebody else's interest, but my own interest in finding answers through investigation, research, experimentation. And experimentation has been, you know, a great deal of this.
Mm-hmm. And I know mostly all the work you've done. I think a lot of people know, they know who you are, unlike on Ancient Aliens, that you're there quite a bit, coast to coast. You've been around and you know a lot of these ufologists, a lot of the people that are involved in these departments, like Linda Moulton Hall. You know, and I think she's retiring, isn't she, Kathleen?
I don't know if she is. I haven't seen her on TV as much or at conferences as much as I used to, because I'm not going to conferences yet. Yeah. I'll be at MUFON's this year as an attendee and to lead a support group. But aside from that, I've had COVID, so I've been away from it for quite a while. But, you know, we eventually all have to semi-retire or retire completely. So I haven't spoken with Linda recently because I'm just getting back on my feet.
Right.
I really love her, and she was a huge mentor to me and helper when I began to speak publicly.
Right. I'm also at that age where I'm semi-retired writing, and I'll never catch up with you, that's for sure. You've had you've got about 9 books, I believe, and we're going to be talking about this latest one. Her latest book, my book, Forbidden Knowledge, A Personal Journey from Alien Abduction to Spiritual Transformation, Edition 1, was a memoir pertaining to the spiritual side of my life's work. I am a multifaceted individual with many interests, and this was a departure from the books I authored earlier in my life. It apparently led to a tsunami of criticism by my detractors, but the majority of my readers have made highly positive comments concerning my investigative endeavors. Now, going from abduction to spirituality, that's what this book is kind of all about, right, Kathleen?
It is. It's sort of a personal journey, as the title says, but it includes my research, my investigation, the three major studies I've worked on with almost 5,000 experiencers, and an experiment, I guess you would call it. It's with communication with extraterrestrial entities. I can tell you about that now if you'd like to hear it. Sure. It's a very interesting part of the book. And I thought I would never, ever do this kind of work. In fact, when some of the historic figures in ufology told me about how they were secretly working on these communication experiments, I thought they were crazy. I thought they had gone around the bend. But that's when I was much younger. And then I discovered that, boy, a lot of people do this and they just don't tell others due to the ridicule factor. So when I had the opportunity in 2016 to work with a team of researchers to study a man from the UK who now lives in Florida, who had had contact since he was a young boy and learned to astral travel and learned to communicate telepathically with this, what they said they were, a council of non-humans. I thought, well, I'll do this quietly, but I'll never tell anybody that I've engaged in this kind of work, just to preserve my reputation as a scientific researcher.
Right.
And then I thought, but what I'm doing is being done using scientific protocols. One of the conditions for doing this experiment with Kevin Briggs was that we were able to take in scientific equipment in order to attempt to measure the presence of these entities. We really didn't know what we were getting into. We'd met Kevin a few times. We'd talked to him. I'd even hypnotized him, taking him back to the time when he was a teenage paper boy, where he had UFO landing, was taken into craft, and had some missing time. So we did agree as a team of investigators to meet with Kevin one Saturday every month for a period of 2 years, and to ask our questions. And it was fascinating. On our first meeting at his home, we took our scientific equipment. We had a tri-field meter. We had a laser thermometer. We had, of course, a tape recorder. And I was in charge of recording all statements, collecting all questions, and transcribing everything. Even though I'm not that great a typist, it bothers me. But you know, that was
even with all your books that you've written, you're saying you're not a great typist, but it's the keyboard that helps out, right?
It is the keyboard that helps out, and you know, making sure that I'm using good posture.
Yeah.
I say I'm not the fastest typist in the world. I've never done it for a living, but I suppose you could say I do it now, since I am an author and have been for a very long time. But anyway, Kevin was a fascinating individual, a real estate agent whose wife had been employed at the psychology department at Leeds University. And she was sort of the head of a part of that department, and had publications and that sort of thing taught. And so, you know, these are grounded people, not crackpots. That was my first question. Is he just putting us on? And so we went to our first meeting. We set up our equipment. And what we noticed was that, well, first of all, let me say that one of our investigators, Dr. Melanie Barton Bragg, is an ordained minister, and she has her doctorate in psychotherapy. So she was there to give us spiritual protection, because that's always extraordinarily important if you're going to interact with extraterrestrials or non-human entities, whatever they are. You want to make sure that you're not going to contact something that's going to attach to you.
So, Kathleen, what you're saying is, when you bring across or you communicate with these extraterrestrials, some of them could be demonic, or is that what you're saying?
Yes, I'm saying that when you're calling something in, anything that's around could try to come in.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you want to make sure that you have a high level of vibration, that you're in a meditative state, that you're protected by divine energy, is the way I think of it.
Okay.
So we're all in this, and Kevin is in a trance. And we begin to ask our questions for the first time, and this different entity, we can't see him, but we can feel his presence. We're all experiencing sort of tingling through our bodies. And he introduces himself and he says, I am Ort. I've been with Kevin since he was a boy, and I'm here to communicate with you. And I understand that you have some questions for me today that I'd be happy to answer. We start asking our just preliminary questions. Tell us about who you are in the Council of Eight. And we found out that the Council of Eight is comprised of two greys, one taller, one shorter. The shorter one is a scientist. Oort is a tall, human-looking individual who is with Dee, who is sort of like a wife or partner to him. He's an educator. So I have those. There is a mantis type named Chica, and he's quite tall and a jolly kind of fellow. Normally I think of a mantis type and they're so big and ugly that
Monster,
right, you just don't want to be near them. But I sensed good energy from him. Then there was a tall white and an avian entity. And then the overseer of these fifth dimensionals, as they called themselves, was Ra. Now you think of the god Ra from Egypt and even from before that in Sumeria, there was a watcher, I believe, named Ra. And this is a watcher. Ra identified himself as a watcher and as the lead council of the Council of Eight. And they said that they were here to assist in our development, that they planted our seed here, and that they came back from time to time to check up on us. And they have attempted to make contact with leaders around the world, heads of state, business leaders, etc. But none of them have any interest in making their presence public.
Really?
So then that's what they said. And then from there they started going to other people, just average people or people who had a voice, maybe people like me and like Dr. Melanie and Kevin and Denise, who are writers and who speak to the public on shows, and many other people as well. And they are not ready to, hover over cities around the world because they said that if they announced themselves in this way, humans would interpret it as an attack upon us, an invasion. And there would be dire results for us if we started using weapons toward them. So they weren't going to do that. But we asked them 120 questions and we received answers over that 2-year period. And those answers are in the book. There's also another one who is sort of a ninth, and she is a watcher. Ra says that she is the right side of him. I guess she sits to the right side. I've tried to clarify that. And these are ninth dimensionals, so they no longer have a body, although they said that a very long time ago they lived here on this planet and they did have bodies at that time. So the ninth dimensional female who calls herself Shiva, not the Indian god Shiva, she says, I wonder, but Shiva is a healer. And when I saw, and the rest of us saw Shiva as a translucent being, she looked like an angel to us. Also, during this process, we noticed how hot Kevin was becoming. He was drenched in perspiration. His clothing was just soaked through. And we measured over these 2 years, and now we meet periodically, but not on a regular basis. We've measured with a laser thermometer up to a 10 degree increase in the temperature in the environment immediately around Kevin, but not in other areas of the room.
Right. You mentioned Ra as being a spiritual being. He's translucent. He doesn't have a physical body. One of the critters I think I've seen one time, and you have mentioned as reptilians. Or are they involved in the Council of Eight?
The Council of Eight members told us that they had invited reptilians to join the Council of Eight, but they had declined because they didn't want to follow the rules set down by the Council of Eight or by the Galactic Federation.
Wow. So the reptilians are probably on the negative side of things, I would imagine.
Well, they want to do what they want to do, is what I was told. They said wherever they go, they think that they own it, and they will behave and work independently of the rules that have been set down by these other extraterrestrials.
But when you these eight, these Council of Eight, you didn't see most of them. They weren't in like a physical holographic being that showed up to you, investigators. Is that right, Kathleen?
We did not see them physically in front of us. They came to us physically. We felt them, their presence through the strong electrical tingling. And I have to say, Ra's tingling was, his energy was greater than the fifth dimensional's and energy. Ra has, not Ra, the small gray scientist has come, Zark, has come into my environment, has come into other environments. We have felt him. I have communicated with him telepathically, directly, and, not just through Kevin. So all of these entities invited us to collect evidence and to communicate directly with them. So one of them selected me, one selected Denise, one selected Melanie. So that's the way it went. And they showed us evidence in terms of craft, orbs, even highly agitated 35 foot or so circle on the lake behind my house. While I could feel Ra, not Ra, I'm sorry, Zark standing next to me and communicating with me telepathically.
Now, are these the little grays you told? Are they the ones who go around and abduct people and take samples and DNA and things of that nature? Are those the same ones, Kathleen?
These are different. They said that some of them do this abduction, these DNA collections, but that they are no longer involved in that. Zark is a scientist, and so he operates independently as a scientist. The little ones are clones, they told us. They might be part biological, part robotic, biorobotic in nature. Those are the little ones whose job it is to transport humans to craft, to get them ready for the examinations, the tests that are taking place on the craft. I have been through, it's been in meditation on craft with Zark, where he showed us around. And I did see someone on a table and two different looking grays. They didn't look like Zark. He had taken us up to the navigational area of the craft. And they commented as I walked by, and I did not like their comment. It was threatening. And Zark told me they didn't know what they were doing and to ignore them. So that's, you know, I don't have all of the answers.
So they come to you telepathically in your consciousness, and that's where they communicate with you a lot of times. They use our minds, I guess, as a tool for receiving their information telepathically. That question also, that wanted to unpack this question too about there. You said you have the Council of Eight, but
yes,
there's many more species of ETs that are flying around our planet. Do they control them? Is there some kind of a peace treaty they have, Kathleen?
From all that I learned, and I mean, we had we didn't have unlimited questions, so I don't know if all of these races of ETs all over the planet are working together or not. I only know that they talk about they are members of an intergalactic federation of planets, and that they follow certain guidelines, and that there are some who do not follow those guidelines and work independently. That's as much information as I could get from them.
They talk about this fighting that's out there in space. Are these ETs, extraterrestrials, are they fighting amongst each other out there from conspiracy words that I've heard, Kathleen?
We did ask about warfare, and they said that a very long time ago, they had been involved in disagreements, is what they call them, with the reptilians. But that had been resolved, and that this Council of Eight is no longer involved in any kind of warfare. This is cooperation that they're working on.
Now, did this Council of Eight, or members of this council, did they meet with President Eisenhower back in 52 and they made this agreement? You see this all over the place on the internet. I don't know if it's, you know, it's true or conspiracy or whatever it is. What do you know about that meeting? Was it the Council of Eight that met with President Eisenhower, Kathleen?
No. I think that we would have known, that they would have told us, if they had met with President Eisenhower, and they didn't mention anything like that. So, you know, if some representative from some other star system met with President Eisenhower, you know, I have no evidence of that. Some people say that they do have evidence of that, but it wasn't the Council of Eight that was involved.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned Ra being, I guess, the eighth dimension. He also is a watcher.
Ra is in the ninth dimension.
Ninth dimension. Now,
yes.
As a watcher, or it's just like Dr. David Jacobs, he said that they're walking amongst us. If he's a watcher, then are there humanoid ETs that are walking amongst us, watching us, Kathleen?
Well, we didn't ask that question of the Council of Eight, but certainly individuals have made that statement that there are humans who have anything ranging from ET DNA, or have had their DNA tweaked by these non-humans, to what David Jacobs calls hubrids, which he says he has reports of, as mantis-type entities who are in human bodies to have this human experience here on Earth. And David Jacobs believes that, of course, if you've read his work, they're here to supplant us. I take a little bit more of an optimistic view of that. And David and I have discussed this face-to-face before. We We believe that there is a genetic upgrade going on our planet, that the ETs have told me time and time again that they're extraordinarily concerned about our failure to be good stewards to our environment, about a possible environmental collapse, about our use of nuclear weapons. And you know, if you are at all familiar with reports dating back into the 1950s, you know that experiencers have been shown visions or even screens of nuclear war where people are being killed, bombs are dropping, people's faces are melting off. Just terrible, terrible, frightening images. Right. And for a long time, we didn't know what that meant. I didn't know if they were showing us images of what happened on their own planets or what might happen in our future. I finally received information from them that it's us that they're worried about. They're worried about human, not only human extinction, but the extinction of life on our planet, because we don't control our aggression. Mm-hmm. And, you know, human emotions is something they've been very, very interested in for a long time. For as long as I've been working with experiencers one-on-one as a support person, people have told me that they have subjected them to experiments that will sort of evoke a strong emotional response, either positive or negative or frightening. And then they extract hormonal tissue from humans. And I'm thinking they're looking at the human emotions. They're concerned about our barbaric behavior. I mean, most of us aren't barbaric, but the danger is those who are.
Yes. They're more concerned about our planet. They don't want us to destroy this beautiful planet. I guess they're not
right.
So concerned about us, our physical bodies, because we go from our, you know, from a physical body into a spiritual form, into another dimension. But they're more concerned about this beautiful planet, ruining it with nuclear weapons. Yeah, I get you on that. Now let's get into your book. Mm-hmm. You said that you got a chapter there, your family. I know.
Yes.
Betty and Barney Hill. They were your family, but what did you mention about your family in there, Kathleen?
Oh, gosh, I talked about my history as the of my grandparents, how my grandmother raised strong women. She had five children, one boy and four girls, and all of my aunts, my mother and my aunts, were very strong women who believed in equal rights. And my grandmother marched for voters' rights and for the rights of workers when she was a union leader at a hat shop in Amesbury, Massachusetts, where she worked for something like 5 cents an hour when she was younger. And, you know, so it's been that kind of thing, that leadership. My grandfather was the chairman of the board of selectmen in the small town that I grew up in. He was a police officer. My family has been really committed to the betterment of society as social workers, as educators, as police officers, you know, that sort of thing. And but we were never really interested in UFOs. We were very politically oriented.
They were interested in you because your family demonstrated that DNA, that progressiveness, as somebody they can contact and influence and get the word out, like you're getting the word out about ETs, UFOs. Let's move on to your other chapter, Serendipitous Manifestations. It comes in meditation? Is that what that's all about, Kathleen?
No. Those serendipitous manifestations began, which is sort of paranormal activity, When my Aunt Betty was conducting sort of CE5 experiments, they called the scientists involved called them parapsychological experiments. And so they gave her the script to read every night. She tried to send telepathic messages to these ETs to show their craft in certain areas. You know, just recently I started to think about the UFO sightings around southern New Hampshire in 1965 through 1968 or so. So many of them. John Fuller wrote The Incident at Exeter about all of these UFO sightings. And this is during the period when Betty was doing these experiments to try to call in craft. And one of these did land on my grandparents' farm in Kingston. Now, I grew up across the street from them, and one landed 200 feet away from my childhood home. It was observed by two people as it was coming in. It was reported, and a UFO investigator came out and collected physical trace evidence from the ground. What we never said is that my mother and I recalled being on the craft that night. We were taken to craft. I remember being on a table. I remember my mother being there. And this was terrifying to me. It was just so shocking that, and it was like the greatest nightmare I had ever had.
How old were you at that point?
Well, I think I was 17 when this happened. That's what I put in the book. That's what, from my memory, I was 17. And my aunt left a diary with all of the dates and what occurred too. So I'm going to say I was 17. But I didn't report it, nor did my mother. This was something we hid and spoke about later and reported to Dr. James Harder from APRO, the Aerial Phenomena Research Organization, and he was a professor at the University of California at Berkeley. He came out to New Hampshire several times. I was actually, during that time frame, I was living in Cincinnati and sometimes in Colorado, but I just happened to be back visiting my family when he was there. And so he hypnotized me. And so I was able to get more clarity on what occurred and to try to overcome some of that trauma that I was holding inside my body. It felt terrible to be frightened to fall asleep at night because this might happen again. And it did occasionally.
Right. And that's, you have a chapter in your lives interrupted, and that's what you're talking about. And a lot of abductees have that, their lives have been interrupted, and they pursue this curiosity. Like myself, I want to know the truth. I want to know who they are, what they're doing. And I've tried to get some people on my show, Kathleen, that have never brought it out, had never told their stories outright or their experiences. And then they back out about a day or two before the show because they're afraid, their family members are afraid that they may be labeled as a kook or whatever. And I try to get these first timers to get on the air and talk about their experiences, get them, into the mood of things, I guess, and accept what they're going to say and don't pay any attention to being called crazy. Kathleen, you have any advice for people like that should come forward first time?
My advice is to make sure that you're comfortable, first of all. What do you have to lose by doing this? Could you lose your job? Could you lose your standing in the community? Could you lose your family, your friends? Really sit down and consider what you have to lose by going public. You know, it took me many, many years before I was willing to say anything at all about what happened to me.
I remember.
And there's been a backlash by some pretty nasty, noisy negativists about that. And it hurts when that happens. But I don't really have anything to lose because I'm 75 years old and I'm working in this field. When I was teaching school, when I was an education services coordinator, when I was a social worker, I didn't tell people about this. I didn't want to be considered a lunatic. I mean, people knew me. They must have known that I was as grounded and stable as you could be. But, you know, you get cast in a different light. And so I think the best thing for people to do, and I'm sorry that I'm disagreeing with you, but the best thing for people to do is join support groups where you can be comfortable, where you can be with other people who have the same experiences or maybe similar experiences to what you're having, where you can obtain support, where you might make friends, where the best thing you can do is have a good friend who is also an experiencer, and you can talk privately at any time.
That's some good advice, Kathleen. I think when first timers are coming to me and I talk to them, I'm going to advise them that exact information you said, because I believe in what you've done and who you are as a social worker. You know the psychology of this whole abduction phenomena, and I have to give you a lot of credit for that, Kathleen. You're one of the tops. I'll tell you. In your book, you mentioned forbidden ufology. What did you mean by forbidden ufology? Is that what we just talked about, Kathleen?
When I talked of forbidden ufology, I talked about the interdimensional aspects of these phenomena and also of going beyond the scope of what is considered orthodox. And when you're talking about communicating with non-humans, that is unorthodox. That's going to draw criticism. That people are going to think that you're kookier than they thought you were before, you know, some people. But there are so many people who are not, who are very interested in this. It's just the very conservative ufologists. And of course, the debunkers who are looking for something that they can criticize you for, even though they've criticized you 500,000 times already, you know, just something new that, yeah, you don't pay attention to them. Don't try to defend yourself. What I think about them, and I'm talking about the skeptics. I have good friends who are conservative ufologists. I used to be one myself until I didn't want to walk on that treadmill over and over again.
I know back in 2011, when you had gave me a survey to fill out, a form about 9 pages, pretty lengthy, and you compiled this in a database, and you went through that with me through my abduction processes in the past, and you were very straight up about it. You were very professional, and you didn't, I guess you didn't plant any seeds. You didn't say anything. And when you got the survey, that survey read out, you know, whatever the conclusion was. But you did this study, and I know you have a lot of knowledge on this background of abductions. Now, exploring forbidden knowledge, the forbidden knowledge you just talked about talking to ETs, Kathleen, that's a chapter in your book. I'm reading these off by a chapter, so you might be able to explain what that is all about. Forbidden knowledge, that's something we're not supposed to know.
Yes, the government doesn't want you to know it. And the Orthodox UFO community does not permit it. Mm-hmm. So, it's something that I have done personally, not as part of the Mutual UFO Network, because that kind of activity is not permitted by the Mutual UFO Network. Right. So this has been sort of an offshoot. It's been my own private research along with a research team. It's scientific in nature. But exploring forbidden knowledge was these meetings and that we had, these questions that we asked this Council of Eight. Let me see if I can find the chapter there, and maybe I can read you something about it.
They still don't want us to know very much. I imagine the military industrial complex and the people to be, I'm not going to name off names, because there's men in black, but there's also two types of men in black. There's government and then there's ET men in blacks. Could you agree to that, Kathleen?
Absolutely. Absolutely. People get threatened by government, so-called government. We're not even sure what agency they're from. Men in black were not necessarily dressed in black suits. They might be dressed in kind of nondescript outfits like everybody else.
Yeah.
Yet they level threats. They threaten to kill you. They threaten to harm your family if you speak about the work that you do. It's that sort of thing. They make you sick if they want to. They yeah. might even put you in the hospital.
Right.
There, but then the men in black from the UFO world, craft, that sort of thing, come as sort of men in black who aren't look human but do not behave like humans,
right.
who are threatening to people, but who also might just show up at your door doing weird things. Or even Denise Stoner has seen women in black in the mall, which was very, very strange. So, but they're different, they're unusual, and they're generally threatening, either kind.
You can sense their energy. I can do that. I've seen the men in black in regular clothing. I mean, it's kind of scary when somebody's stalking you and watching you, and they're doing it to intimidate you. And that's a TI, targeted individual, they call it. And I guess that forbidden ufology, that's what that part of that chapter is probably about, is about, you know, that this one side, there's part of the Pentagon who wants to release the disclosure, and then there's another half that doesn't want to, and they battle against each other. So it hasn't been released. Is that true, Kathleen?
Yes, this has been the history of the Pentagon dating way back into the 40s, where part of the military officers, military generals, believed that they should disclose the information that they had regarding flying discs, you know, to the public. And then the other part gave tremendous pushback against it. And the CIA formed, and the CIA got involved in the non-disclosure of information for national security reasons. So, I mean, we're now having the first congressional investigations in 50 years, and we're still, we have Congress who, you know, is looking, the Congressional Oversight Committee on UFOs is looking for the truth. They're looking for information, but they are receiving pushback from the Pentagon, who still refuses to release their information.
Right. You mentioned in your notes, I got some notes here, Louis Alessandro. Did you talk to him personally, I guess, and get the impression from him and the other two people? One of them's a defense secretary in the past. I can't think of his name, Lehman or something like that. But there are three of them, and they were the head of this investigation for disclosure. Is Louis Alessandro, is he on the level, Kathleen? Does he really work hard at this?
I have met Luis Elizondo one time and spoken to him. He is a very kind and gentle man. That's how he comes across. He has terrific energy. He seemed like a very loving kind of individual when I met him. Humble, yet so intelligent. And of course, he is who he says he is. The government is saying he is this person. It's in the government's files that he is this person. So I know there are people who are trying to say, oh, we can't find any evidence that of who he is or what he's done. But the Defense Intelligence Agency knows who he is and what he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And they've released it. The Defense Intelligence Agency, through the Freedom of Information Act, has released quite a lot of information, interesting information.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, Luis Elizondo is on the level, and he did do what he said he did. for the ATIP.
Right. And right now they're at kind of a stalemate, I guess, Louis and a couple of his cohorts. And that Blink 81 or 821 musician guy who headed up the
Tom DeLonge.
Tom DeLonge.
Yeah, they parted ways. You know, some people have disagreements. They part ways. They just want to go in different directions to explore different things.
Yeah, that's probably part of this whole disclosure thing. It's just like they're supposed to have a meeting in Florida, in your home state, and the Pentagon's supposed to meet with representatives on the political side and also the MUFON side and the people investigating. But that meeting was canceled by the Pentagon because they didn't want to talk about it anymore. So that kind of ended, I guess, the disclosure, total disclosure, but they still talk about it on TV and in the newspapers that the Navy pilots spot the UFO here, they spot them here. They're reporting the sightings now, so that's kind of a drip, drip, but we'll never get full disclosure. Is that how you're thinking also, Kathleen?
Yes, and you know, for those who don't know the way this process has worked recently, every year the Congress has to agree on defending the spending the money for the national defense. So they have the National Defense Initiative, and they have to allocate a certain amount of funding to that, and each year recently, within recent years, they have allocated funding to UFO studies. And each year, the title of the program has changed. So, and it becomes more and more amorphous. You know, now they call them unidentified anomalous phenomena. So every year it becomes something that is less and less solid in a sense. And something that I've noticed as well, and oftentimes the Defense Department has something to do with this. For years, we had television programs on UFOs, and they would have experts who would give the evidence, who would tell the truth, and that would be it.
Right.
And now suddenly, they're bringing out debunkers again. They had done that, you know, before like 2012, 2013. Now, all of a sudden, on some of these shows, they're bringing out debunkers again. And they're setting up people who are experts and who have documented information that they can prove. They might do, you know, a 3, 4, 5, 6 hour interview with an expert. And then they will select out little segments. And then sometimes they, and this happened to me on one show where I was under contract to speak about two important cases in Florida. And in this show, they talked about something entirely different, but they used my words to make me look foolish regarding this other case that I didn't even comment on.
Wow.
And then they brought out someone who was allegedly retired from the National Security Agency who said Kathleen Martin doesn't know what she's talking about.
They're doing this with influencers. I don't even a low level influencer. They're trying to shadow ban you. They knock your numbers down.
And they do.
They'll actually take you off the internet. So. I feel it. I know what is happening to me. And I also see an occasion on the computer that somebody's watching me. And I thought, okay, that's fine. I'm telling the truth. I'm not telling anything that's out of the ordinary. And my guest, just like you, you're a fabulous guest. You're the top of the ufologist field. And I respect your opinion. And I just, you know, I get into this thing where I get scared sometimes myself. And I know I talked to you here a while back about that. And you said, well, get pictures of these people and figure out who they are, or plate numbers and stuff. And I was afraid because I thought maybe if I started taking a picture that they might pull out some kind of a weapon or something. Like you said, they make people sick. They have this scalar wave and they have the microwave That's the Havana syndrome that they sometimes use on people. I don't know if they use it on influencers. I don't know who's doing it. So I'm not saying anything, that the public hasn't heard already.
Right.
But what do you think about that? You were the scalar wave and the dew weapon and the microwave Havana syndrome weapon. Have you heard anything about that from any of the people you talked to or interviewed, Kathleen?
I've only heard about this from Gary Nolan's studies,
right?
And I, of the brains of military pilots, military personnel who have come close to craft or been taken on craft, and of course the Havana syndrome that the CIA funded him to study. So I know. There's a lot of information in the UFO field that's sort of I'm not sure about. I can't say it is happening. I can't say it's not happening.
Yeah.
I'm just and I'm doing my own work, so I don't even have time to look into that kind of thing.
Right.
So maybe others are looking into the brains of people who are speaking publicly about this to see if there's some kind of damage that's taking place, if they're developing dementia or that sort of thing. But, it is definitely, it reminds me of Hitler.
Yeah.
To say it. And I hope that our government, that entities or agencies within our military are not so nasty as to do that, because I'm not trying to convince the public of anything. I'm talking to the interested public, those who want to know more. I'll tell them what I know. I was an educator. When I learn something, I teach. Mm-hmm. That's what I do.
And you've done a good job. Let's get into the last thing here, since we're running down on time. The visions and prophecies, what do you see as that in your chapter in your book, Kathleen?
I talked about my father. I believe when my father died, and I'm not sure if it's in the first edition or the second edition or both, but my father passed away, and he had lived with me. We were very close, and on the night that he died, he came to me, and I couldn't get him out of my head. And every time I closed my eyes, and I wasn't asleep,
mm-hmm.
Every time I closed my eyes, he was there. And he was in a long line of men who were obviously deceased, and sort of spiraling through almost a cave-like tunnel, not a cave, but some kind of a tunnel, maybe a portal, I don't know. And I kept getting up out of bed. I'd go out into my kitchen, but whenever I'm standing up wide awake, close my eyes, and there I am again with him.
Thanks.
And finally, it's the weirdest experience I think I've ever had. Finally, we got to the point where I could see the light at the end of the tunnel, and we were just a couple, and before I could see the sky, and there was a man standing there. And, my father was a devout Catholic. I don't know if this was Jesus, if this was God, who this was, but there was someone there who was sort of a gatekeeper. And I knew that it was almost time to stop. And I said, I want to vouch for my father. I have to go. I have to wake up soon, get up for the day. And I said, my father has never said anything bad about anyone in his entire life, as far as I know. He spent his life devoted to helping others. He was Catholic. He went to church every day of his life. And please let him pass. And then, without even saying goodbye, my father went whoosh off into the distance. That was one of the visions that I've had that was so strange. And And I still question what it was because this kind of thing had never happened
It
to me
sound like it's a
before.
very lucid a dream or whatever regression. Could
But
you?
I was wide awake with I was wide awake standing up, drinking a glass of water, and I'd close my eyes and it was there.
Oh, could you tell everybody where to find your books, Kathleen? We're at the end of the show now. We're up to the bar. It goes by fast. I know.
Yes, it
I
does.
had other notes here to cover, but you're so full of knowledge that I know it would take much longer than an hour to.
Well, it was a great conversation and I enjoyed it. You can purchase autographed copies of my book at my website at Kathleen-Marden, MARDEN.com. Or all of my books are available on Amazon, most of them on Barnes and Noble. A lot of them are available as audiobooks. All of them are available as ebooks, and so there you go.
It's her latest book, Forbidden Knowledge, A Personal Journey from Alien Abduction to Spiritual Transformation. I thank you so much, Kathleen Martin, for being on my show. It was an honor to have you, and I was looking forward to it. You've been listening to The Strange Reality with Dave Emmons and Kathleen Martin. Thank you, and good night, everybody.